Dun, dun, dun.
Amateurs practice until they get it right. Professionals practice until they can't get it wrong. And welcome to another episode of PodNuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B. And ladies and gentlemen, tonight I am coming at you live from Boca Raton, Florida, where we are doing the first of the Summer Tech Series. And later I will be joined by my good friend Ben Filippelli with Level 5 Management as we talk as much tech as we can in the next hour to help you run your business better, smarter, and faster. That is the purpose of PodNuts Pro. It is your podcast for business IT support. So as we get started, I want to first give a couple of thank yous for some people that last week have gone on and gave us some donations and some contributions. Some people like Tom and Jason and Kyle are now patrons supporting the show. I want to thank you for doing that. For those of you that want to learn more about the show or how you can contribute, head over to podnutspro.com and you'll be able to visit and either watch or listen to all of the past episodes. You'll be able to go to the Amazon store, buy things as you normally would. A little bit of commission will come back to the show to help us do things like this. And you can donate through Amazon, you can donate through PayPal, buy me a cup of coffee, and of course, contribute on Patreon. So that is going to do that. So when I mentioned that this is the first of the Summer Tech Series, we are beginning what I think is going to be 2 or 3 months of all technicians, managed service providers, business owners, tech professionals, computer repair shops. And we're going to be talking to everybody about all the things that they do to run their business. And it can be anything from tech stuff to vendors to business practices. We're going to have a lot of different topics to go through. And we're going to have some great guests, some of them that you will already know. Good friends Jason Miller, Tom Bull are going to be back. Ben Filippelli tonight is the first-time guest. We're going to have the Wild Gals. The Hurricane Ladies, Dawn Sizer and Nancy Sabino, are also going to be on. We've got some other people coming on the show. I will mention them as we go along. But it is going to be a great summer of shows, all here, all live, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Not all of them will be on location like this one here, but I am here at Ben's shop, and we'll see if we can get a little picture here. But we're out in his front foyer area, where we've got the couch and some game machines over there, Ms. Pac-Man, a lot of stuff for his techs and staff to do when they are not working all the time. So let me go ahead and bring Ben into the screen here. And there he is on screen there in front of his Level 5 banner. And interesting little moniker there, Ben. Business technology managed at a new level.
Yeah, well, Level 5, that's how it's going to go, right?
Yep, that is it. So let's do the double screen here. So we will now be on here. And yes, you can take those headsets off now. Yes. All right. Good job. All right. So we don't really need to do a weather check since we are both here in the same location. But of course, as per usual, a lovely day. Now, it did rain earlier down by me in Fort Lauderdale. Did it rain up here for you guys?
I don't know, actually. Did it look like it was wet outside? I actually been outside in 10 hours, so I couldn't tell you. I don't think it rained up here.
But it's a nice 82 degrees right now, but with a real feel of 84. So it's still a little warm.
Yeah.
And so it's going to rain tonight, though.
Well, we better get this done then.
Yeah.
Can't be in the rain.
I got to drive home. I can't drive in the rain.
Yeah. And well, nobody else can either down here, so you're all right.
All right. So, folks, we are doing a live show. So if you happen to be catching us on the video, either YouTube or the Facebook, feel free to throw your comments or questions in the chat there, and I will bring the question up and we will answer and respond as best that we can. Let's see, are there any other announcements? Not really, because everything is based on Summer Tech series. So whatever stories the techs come up with, that's what we'll talk about. So why don't we go ahead and do one quick segment that has been absolutely a joy for me. And let me get my papers here, since I am not in my usual location. I've got to look like a news anchor. But we are going to go inside the news. The FBI warns of ongoing Conti ransomware attacks on healthcare organizations and first responders. It has been a summer of ransomware all over the place, but the FBI has issued a new TLP:WhiteFlash notice about ongoing ransomware attacks targeting healthcare and first responder networks. According to the FBI, the Conti ransomware gang has attacked 16 healthcare and first responder organizations in the United States. It is believed to be operated by the Russian cybercrime group Wizard Spider and is a ransomware as a service operation. That is the first I have heard of that. So they have been known to attack large organizations and have issued huge ransom demands, which have been as high as $25 million. We definitely are in the wrong business. So, of course, the FBI gives out their recommendations to harden your defense. Of course, they include regularly backup your data, test the backups and store them on air-gapped devices, retain multiple copies of sensitive and proprietary data on servers that are physically separate and cannot be accessed from the systems where data resides, implement network segmentation, use multi-factor authentication, patch and update systems, software and firmware promptly, use strong passwords, disable hyperlinks in outbound and inbound email, conduct regular user audits, only secure networks and avoid public Wi-Fi networks, use a VPN for remote access, and of course, ensure all members of the workforce are provided with regular security awareness training. How about that?
Yeah. Well, right. The MSP security checkbox.
Yep. And let's see, there's a couple of other stuff here, but I want to go over this week's Florida Man story. And you may have heard about a gentleman who tried to use the Florida Stand Your Ground defense to get away with animal cruelty after he was charged by brutally beating an iguana to death. Well, that motion was denied today. So PJ Nilaja Patterson said he only beat the iguana to death after it attacked him. His attorneys filed a motion to dismiss the charges, claiming he was trying to save the animal from getting run over by cars in Lake Worth back in September 2020. When he brought it to safety, a crowd agitated the animal and it bit his right arm when he tried to move it. It says he then kicked the iguana as far as he could. So, basically, let me explain the Florida Stand Your Ground law. It says that you can use deadly force if a person reasonably believes that using or threatening to use such force is necessary to prevent imminent death or great bodily harm. So the fact that he believed that a 3-foot iguana could have injected poison into him was his defense. So I should probably also state that under state law in Florida, people are allowed to kill iguanas because they are an invasive species, but it must be done in a quick and humane manner. So there was a necropsy done on this iguana, which showed it had a lacerated liver, broken pelvis, and internal bleeding, which were, quote, painful and terrifying injuries. So Patterson is due back in court on July 30th. He faces up to 5 years in prison if convicted of animal cruelty. Mm. So, Ben, you live here in Florida. You've been here for a while.
Yeah.
Ever heard a story like that?
No, I've never heard a story like that. But, you know, that's every week here.
Yes.
Every week is a new story.
We have a comment already from the chat where it says, I hope the wizard spiders don't get around. All right. That is my good friend, Chris. Thank you very much. All right. So, Ben, so this is the first time we've done an on-location tech show. So I'm going to pull the mic up a little closer to you just to make sure we get you here. So, so how's it going up here in Boca?
It's going all right. You know, it's just Boca, you know, mouth of the rat. You know, Palm Beach County, you know, everything is good for the most part. You know, kind of got out of COVID pretty much unscathed. You know, I think everyone around here did for the most part. So, you know, we're just kind of back to business as normal. You know, we're almost there now. I did my second QBR today, actually.
Okay.
So we went on person, you know, on site, stuff like that. So it's nice to kind of get back to routines and things like that. So.
All right. So have you noticed things getting more back to normal? I know that you've gone through your vaccination. So are your clients vaccinated?
Usually everywhere I've been going, I bring the mask and stuff like that, and you know, wherever people are comfortable with. But everywhere I've gone so far, I've been vaccinated. So I think they did a pretty good job down here of making sure, you know, well, you know, not from a political standpoint, but people made sure they went and got vaccinated and got, you know, got signed up and stuff. So I think that's going pretty well too.
All right. So to talk a little bit about your company, so Level 5 Management here in Boca, you started in 2008.
Yeah, well, I officially started in 2008. I was still under NDA from my public company that I finished off with. And in 2010, we officially launched.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And you've got a pretty big space here. So how many people you have working for?
There is 12.
Okay.
12 people. So, you know, about 12 people. So we're not a huge place. We're not tiny. You know, we're kind of, you know, run-of-the-mill average size, I think, you know, for most MSPs. But yeah, this is about 2,600 square feet space.
All right. So I've got just under, let's see, I think we're at 800 square feet now. Mm-hmm. We're going to try to take over the rest of the side of our building. So we'll have 2,000 square feet so I can start bringing techs in full time again. And then I have a nice little conference room space and set up a little server room area and stuff like that. So pretty good, pretty good.
Yeah.
Now, we were talking before the show, and Ben's location is literally less than, what are they, half a mile from you, from a client that we could possibly share.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's walking distance. You're talking about the BAA guy?
Yep. So I can say their name because they're not fully my client. Mm-hmm. I actually subcontract with them, but the Boca Airport Authority was a client of mine years ago, and I still go see them probably once a year or so because the company that does the sound level checking devices is called Digital Logger, and they're out west, but whenever they want feet on the ground, they still want me to go out and do that stuff, so I go out and see them, and they actually do co-managed IT, and there's a chance you guys could be doing their co-management.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what happens. You know, nice little feather in the cap. I always like to do clients that are close to. It just makes it easy.
If you can walk to them, it's easy.
Yeah. If I got to rush there in an emergency, it's easy. So it's always nice to be right there. But, you know, we thought it'd be a good feather in the cap to say, hey, this is our client. We have some other clients on the other side. Some over in the terminal, aircraft shops, stuff like that we're talking to. So we thought if we have them too, it'd be nice to go. You know, we do those guys over there.
It's a nice little corridor there.
Yeah.
That's been built up a lot. When I first started working, there wasn't anything there. All that was empty.
Yeah. It was just empty. There's law firms in there now and everything. It's
law firms. There's a Boomers.
Yeah. Boomers is over there.
Nice theater. There's a nice theater.
Yeah. That is nice. The Boca Theater is really nice. Just go there all the time. So looking forward to that again too.
All right. Now let's go ahead and let's start off with the co-managed topic. So is that something that you guys have done a lot of?
Yeah, I mean, we have you know, some of our larger clients, are co-managed. You know, they have internal staff and stuff like that. I mean, they're very, very profitable. If you have a good relationship with the staff and the team and they don't feel threatened, it's actually a very, very profitable relationship, you know, for the most part. You get your tools on there, you know, you're managing everything. A lot of your stuff is automated. So you're not spending a lot of man hours. But yet the company does all the help desk, setting up new servers and computers and stuff like that. They're doing all that. And then you come in for big projects. So it's nice. It's not as, you know, because it's most of your money's in the project side of it.
Right.
You know, I mean, you make good money every month on them, but, you know, then you get these big projects, you know, six-figure projects and stuff like that. But, you know, they don't come every week or every month. So, you know, you just stay, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you're making 60%, 70% or 50, even 50%, whatever you're making on them, you know, makes it worth it. And I guess that's really the key, right, in this space is, you know, 50% is your minimum.
Okay. So your typical client, let's start with what's the size of your typical client?
So my typical client is probably right around, on average in the MSP area, is probably 25 to 35, 40 users.
Okay.
Right around there. Our co-managed are all like 200-300 plus.
Okay.
State and stuff like that. So we have a handful of those.
All right. So I'm a small co-managed. I've got one with 185. It's not that big at all.
Yeah. No, that's a nice size. It's all relevant, right? It's all about the percentage. You know,
it is.
What your profit margins are and stuff.
So for now, so I've got a couple of co-managed, and for the most part, I'm really just their help desk. Is that kind of what you guys are for your people?
We're the opposite. We come in as kind of like the experts.
Okay.
So they actually have help desk staff. So they actually staff the low end. So password resets and, you know, printer and all that stuff is all done internally. They call us for the SAN, the VMware stuff, data center things, you know, standing up new servers, working with their development team, you know, for new application deployment and stuff like that. So okay. We actually do the opposite. We work on the back end. So we don't, we'll go weeks without talking to those clients other than, you know, they get the obligatory check-in call and stuff like that, you know, and keep the relationship going. But we're kind of on the flip side of it.
Okay.
The co-managed, yeah.
All right. Well, that's good. So my clients, so they want to treat it like the help desk, mm-hmm. but all the server stuff, we still do that.
Yeah.
We still handle their backups
because
it's, you know, there may be a local appliance,
right?
But their backups go into the cloud. So if it's not on the local appliance, then they call us to pull it down
right. And
all that stuff.
Yeah.
And of course, all the project work we get, but it's frustrating that.
If you're in the help desk, then it's managed. It's not co-managed, right?
Well, it's weird because they want, what they do, I guess help desk is the wrong term. We're their fire department.
Yeah. So, that's the worst point. That's the last thing you have to want to be.
They'll try to do all they can. And so if they can't figure it out, you know, they may work on a problem for 2 weeks.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, call us up. You know, we got to have this right away.
Right.
And
right away to you, but it's been 3 weeks for them.
Right.
Right.
And if you'd have called me 3 weeks ago, it'd have been fixed already.
Right.
So that's all fun.
Yeah. We get some of that too with them once in a while. Once in a while. But that's for us, you know, we try to integrate with them. We integrate with the help desk and stuff like that. So we can kind of see the trends and the things going on. So we do keep an eye on that there. And the guys will chime in once in a while if they see something. And, you know, my weekly call now are they dedicated IT in your co-manager? You have like a dedicated person or is it somebody who kind of just does the stuff?
Most of the two big ones, yes, there's a dedicated IT person. They're really more a desktop person.
Right.
And then we've got one situation where they're supposed to be a dedicated IT person, but it's really the firm administrator who tries to do everything and only wants the desktop person if he doesn't have time.
Right.
And then if neither of them have time,
they
call me.
Yeah. Yeah. That had to be fixed yesterday. Yeah. I mean, you might want to see if you can train those guys to just communicate with you better.
Try.
If there's a way, And sometimes there's not a way. Oh, phone calls.
It's interesting because so the one problem client, I'm sorry, the one
challenge?
I don't even want to say that. The one opportunity client.
Oh, there you go.
So we charge them a flat fee for X number of hours of remote support.
Right.
So those calls don't cost them anything.
Right.
But for some reason, after 10 years, they still think every time they call, it's a charge.
Yeah.
And I try to explain to them, no, if I can do it remotely, there's no charge.
Right.
I only charge you if I come on site.
It's coming out of the 80 hours though, right?
It's coming out of the 80 hours, but it's, I mean, they're paying for 80 hours. Yeah.
No, it's probably, they probably think that they probably keep thinking every year they're going to use it like insurance, right? So you're more like an insurance salesperson in that regard, right? I'm selling you 80 hours of insurance, you know, that I'll be there if you need me. So maybe they're looking at more like insurance almost, you know, where it's like, we don't want to use it, you know, but in reality, then every year they probably have 60 hours left or 40 hours left. They're like, hey.
Yeah, because, I mean, we don't use, now when I say the 80 hours, that's, they're paying for 80 hours at a reduced rate.
Right.
And a lot of that is, you know, me doing stuff like their, you know, antivirus checks, their backups, you know, making sure their updates are done and patched. So, I mean, that's a lot of it. But, you know, the end user support is really, you know, included.
Yeah.
I mean, one call a day for 15 minutes is.
I'm trying to bump them up. Seriously.
More.
Well, I mean, you're going to do the remote support for free. I would say, listen, let me add, you know, 10% onto the user fees, and then I'll just do remote support.
Yeah.
And I'll add remote support or something. See if that's profitable for you.
All right. We are going to do one thing that I've actually not had to do before during a live show. You're actually going to see me wander off the screen because my laptop is running low on battery. So I'm going to get it plugged in.
Oh, yeah. I'll get in. You want me to stand and do like the intermission thing?
Yep, we can do that. So, wow, it just dropped a percentage already. So, all right. So let's do this. Let's actually play some music. This will be great. And then I'll have somebody from YouTube that will come in and say, you can't use that.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Remember I was saying earlier, I said, you know, you'll be on battery, and then we're going to have a ghost come through here, and that battery's going to drop, and sorry I jinxed it.
You did. Yeah. The one time. There we go. For those of you wondering about the music choice, that is the karaoke version of Kaylee Hammack. And the song is entitled Family Tree. I'll have a link to that in the show notes, and you can go look on the YouTube and see the video. All right, there we go.
We'll have to make that a question of the day next time. Right.
Yeah, for an Amazon gift card.
Yeah.
Guess the song.
Guess the song I played in the middle of this.
Let's see how that is. All right, so co-managed IT. Yeah, so my customer, and it's not, I mean, I'll go ahead and say the price because they don't really listen. So 80 hours at $95.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Pretty big, pretty nice deal.
Mm-hmm. That, check up front.
This one's on American Express.
Yeah, well, you pay 3%.
Yeah.
No, it's not too bad.
And they're the ones that pay usually in 10 minutes. If she's in the office, we send the invoice, it's paid right away.
Yeah.
So I'm not as hurt by it.
Right.
But
not a bad thing. Yeah. I mean, they just get them to use it.
Yeah. Get them to use it.
It's really the key. Yeah. You know, because sometime down the road, somebody's going to come along and go, we don't ever use this one, pay these guys this much. And you'll have to fight.
Yeah.
You know, and say, well, no, it's 80 hours. And they're like, yeah, but we only use 40. And so I think for you, you want them to use those hours.
Well, the thing is to do the reporting to show them, look, you don't just use, you know, there's stuff being done in the background.
Right.
Now, you mentioned, you know, getting them to pay more. So one of the things I noticed when I saw your site, and we didn't talk about this before, we've talked about other stuff, but you do hardware as a service.
Yes.
So I wanted to ask you, how did you transition and get people to do that and describe that program for you guys?
Yeah. So, you know, ancient Chinese secrets, right? It's a little secret sauce there. I mean, not really, but Yeah, so for us, it was, you know, clients who were maybe a little cloud averse, you know, but needed new equipment. So we basically put our clients into, you know, two camps, right? You're either on-premise, you know, or right, your cloud, right? And then from there, you have two more camps. So you're either a private cloud with us, we have our own data center pieces, you know, we'll go to AWS or Azure or something. On-premise was either buy all new equipment or, you know, we do hardware as a service. So it has to be replaced. So depending on the client, depending on the pricing structure, sometimes hardware as a service was better for them. We include all the support and everything like that around it. So we just kind of bundle it in. What I did with that was I actually bought a, not where some people buy brand new servers and they build it into the price. I didn't want to be on the hook for 3 years. So what I did was I bought a one generation down of okay. servers and I bought multiple of them. So so I have 10, 11 HP servers out there, but I've got four that sit here in stock that are the same. So I can literally take the entire server and go out there and replace it. I can pull the drives out, swap the drives out, whatever. So if they actually had hardware failure, I can give them better support than even HP could, because I could be there in an hour with the replacement unit and okay. just swap it out. But because I bought them one generation down, I was able to buy them all cash in one shot.
Okay. So you're doing that as an expense to your business mm-hmm. and then billing and then, out to
and
them.
And renting them out. So instead of carrying, instead of leasing it brand new with a 3-year warranty from HP or Dell and then carrying the note and then I'm on the hook for 3 years, I actually can go one generation back, buy the $10,000 server for $2,000, $2,500 or whatever, you know, a lot less, and just buy it cash.
All right. Do you ever have clients that will look at you and say, this doesn't look new?
No, they ultimately don't care. I mean, they look new to begin with, but that wasn't really the point.
Right.
The point was they had a problem and we had a solution. It wasn't like, well, I need brand new stuff. You want brand new stuff, then we'll bring in a lease and you can spend $100,000 and get brand new stuff. If you want stuff that we're going to manage, support, maintain, and everything like that for X dollars, this is what it is. And most people are like, well, if it does the job,
all right.
You know, so we don't get a lot of pushback on that. People, you know, we don't hide that they're not brand new out of the box, shiny brand new boxes, but we're like, look, we have spares we keep in the office. And if there's a problem, you're going to get better support for me than if I had to call HP and have some unknown tech come out here and figure out what's going on and get rid of replacement parts, because I will literally just bring the server over.
All right. Are you an HP shop?
No, but we've kind of leaned on HP now for servers. Many years ago, a very, very big HAS provider, VMware, said that of all the servers they went with, IBM was the best in virtualization. HP was a notch below, and then Dell was far, far below. And we talked about it a little bit, and he said, you know, if you're running Dell with VMware and you're running about 20, 30%, it runs great, great for the price. But when you're getting into like computing, high computing and edge, you know, you need to run the server like 95%, right? It's like you want to squeeze every ounce. IBM was the best and HP was right behind it.
Okay.
So we kind of glommed onto HP. It was a good price point. So we'll run servers I never sat there and checked it myself, but I think they're right because we've got HPs that are spec the same as Dell's and we'll run them at like 97% usage and they'll run for years and years and years and no one will even blink at them. And those Dells, we've seen that and we have problems with them.
Okay.
So I don't disagree with that for my own personal, and it's anecdotal, but just my personal opinion, but you know, experiences, but yeah, so we kind of land on an HP.
Okay.
Yeah.
I asked because we're an HP shop.
Yeah.
And I went through the Dell, was a Dell solution provider, mm-hmm. and it just took so long to get price quotes and shipping and the support, even though it cost more, it was great support. Now I'm buying my servers brand new. Yeah. I'm giving them 5-year, 24/7, you know, warranty support. And HP was just it. So we just settled on HP.
Yeah.
And I had a question there, but I wanted to respond. So somebody that is watching live mm-hmm. asked me, so if you're watching the show, whether live or playback, the reason that the screen is different than it normally is because I'm here on site. And because we're sitting at opposite sides of the table, and I'm going to flip the camera around. So Ben is sitting here, and I'm on the other side of the table. So I've got two cameras here that we are using a video capture card. And the sad part is that I can only get the screen to show part of me at the same time that Ben is on.
I take up too much. Sorry. I got a big head.
You're a bigger guy than me. What are you, like 6'3", 6'4"?
About 6'4".
Yeah. Okay, yes. I'm 5'9". Yeah. So I can change the screen to this way, but then there's only part of me, and then I got to flip my head over here to get squished. Or I can do it the other way, but then I get half of Ben. So we can go opposite this way. And I guess depending on who's talking, I can make
me bigger. Go sideways, maybe we can go landscape mode. Time to turn the screen.
We'll see how that goes later. Yeah. And we're back.
Yay.
But we have an echo. Yes. So I was just saying to Ben, do not attempt to change stuff during the live show.
No technical changes in real time. Thank you. You may now proceed.
All right, folks, we're gonna change this again. I'll be right back. And we're back again. No echo.
Yay.
All right. So, folks, I will need a little bit of assistance here because I'm not doing a replay to see if I'm live or not. So if somebody can be so kind as to tell us whether or not you can hear our audio, I would appreciate that. And as many of you know, I normally do not edit. I may have to edit this time. So,
I'm making Marvin work tonight.
All right. Well, I got a response. Gotcha. All right. So we are back. Thank you, Mr. Tom Bull. Tom Bull, who will be showing up later this summer on the Summer Tech Series. So thank you, Tom.
Thank you,
Tom. All right. And Ryan, I'm going to blame you for asking that question about why I'm not full screen. All right. So, we were talking about hardware as a service.
Hardware as a service.
And talking about being an HP shop, and you're able to do a generation back. Now, they just came out with generation 10. Mm-hmm. And I had to send out an update email. So we just sold a server to a client that moved to Deltona, Florida.
Okay.
And for those of you that don't know, Deltona, Florida is basically in between Orlando and Daytona Beach.
Yeah.
And it is a lawyer who is working out of her house, but she wants a server.
In her house.
In her house.
See, I would not allow her to do that.
So.
This is not Hillary Clinton. You don't get to put servers in your bathroom.
I don't have to monitor her email, so. And she's willing to pay. So,
all right.
And we don't really do anything. I have remote access.
Right.
But that's it.
Yeah.
So she pays me $195 a year for the one time that I connect.
Yeah.
So we sold her a Gen 10 server. And one thing I do on HP servers, so I purchase my own hard drives and get the HP caddies for the hot swaps.
Right.
Well, when I saw the pictures, the hard drive caddy looked the same as the Gen 9s.
Mm.
So I just ordered drives, didn't order new caddies.
Uh-oh.
Gen 9 caddies don't work in the Gen 10 servers.
Ah. Yeah, they moved the little electronics there.
Yeah, just a hair, just a fraction.
Yeah, just enough. It's just enough to make you buy more stuff.
Yep. So I think I'll take your idea and just going a generation back.
Yeah, go a generation back. I mean, if you're selling them, probably get people things brand new. But if you're actually owning it, then I would get generation back.
Yeah. So now part of why that works for you too is since you're doing a lot of your stuff yourself. So you have your own data center.
Not my own data center, but
I'm pimping you up.
Right. But we have a couple cabinets here in Boca, and we have one out in Phoenix. So we're managing about 90 terabytes of capacity right now for our clients.
All right. And the services you're running out of the center?
We're doing a lot of private cloud services and then, backup stuff. We use Wasabi still for some clients where it makes sense.
Okay.
So we still even lean on Wasabi a little bit. I have some clients in other states and stuff that we'll just send it right to, instead of haul it all the way back to me, we just send it to Wasabi. but all our enterprise clients are backed up to us.
Okay.
Yeah. If they're not in our stuff, as you know, I'm my own biggest, as mentioned earlier, I'm my own biggest client.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a funny way.
That's nice.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Oh, I was going to ask you on the hardware as a service. Mm-hmm. Do you do a standard refresh, like 36 months, 48 months, 60, or do you just ride it till it dies?
I ride it till it dies.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, if they need it, we'll do it sooner. If they don't need it, we'll let it ride a little bit longer. And we'll replace them, just out of replacement. When I'm down to, I think I have four of the last generation left. I'll probably do something with them. You know what I mean? I might just get rid of, get down like a couple. Like if one or two die, I'll start to work on replacing them.
Okay.
So I like to keep a few in stock. I'm not going to go back and buy more. So if one or two die over the next year, I mean, none of them have died yet. But at least the ones I have out there now, this generation. But one or two go, I'll take that as a sign. I'll start to work on getting the next one. And, then I'll start to go rip and replace. And then I'll just eBay all those off or might put them in the lab out of them or something. I mean, they'll get put to use.
Okay.
Definitely won't lose money on them.
All right. So you're doing the private cloud out of there. So you're doing, your Azure stuff, your backup stuff, 365?
You have a mix of 365 and hosted Exchange. Okay. Exchange servers are my single largest chunk of things between the two data centers active.
All right.
Is hosted Exchange.
What version of Exchange?
We're on 2016 in a dual a DAG over here, and then it also replicates to a DAG over in Phoenix.
Okay.
So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 servers across, I want to say 6 or 7 databases, but it's about, each one is about 7, 6 terabytes, something like that. About 6 terabytes of mail.
All right.
So they're pretty good.
Now, are you doing those in a cluster where you're doing the maintenance on them every so often?
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. Like when that big Exchange bug came out, I was like, oh, not sleeping the night because my stuff, you know what I mean?
Right.
Not, yeah. But we have a lot of 365 clients out there. We actually have more than we thought. I just saw our last PAX 8 bill and I was like, oh, geez. So we're putting people on 365. We're really just doing, for us, it's the solution that fits. One of my big clients that's on that I went to the QBR today, they're looking to do some stuff with Power BI, and so they're moving on. They have enterprise SQL developers there, and I told them, I said, "Hey, you're on our hosted Exchange, a couple hundred mailboxes, and really, we should probably get you on 365." They're happy with what they have, but I'm like, "But the better solution is to move you on, to move on."
So. I'm sorry, mm-hmm. I just looked at the chat, and the question is, Marvin, why are you so small? So, John, I am not going to answer that.
He's not changing anything.
I'm not going
to. You're late to the party.
Yeah,
pal.
Yeah. You missed the beginning. You missed that show about 10 minutes ago where I tried to show the room that we were in and why I have different views. And we lost picture.
Yeah.
And sound.
But we got echo.
And nice echo. Not the Amazon Echo that listens to everything, yeah. But like it. What did you think about that story where they're talking about now?
With sharing the Wi-Fi?
Well, sharing the Wi-Fi.
I mean, look, Comcast does it now.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're an Xfinity customer now, they're turning on public, the public access. So, you could be out in front of somebody's house and be on their Xfinity device.
They've been doing that for years, which is why I tell clients, we turn it off or we get our own modem if we have to use Comcast.
I've been letting clients use that for people who have it. I mean, let them use it for the guest, mm-hmm. Or Unify. And I'm like, look, we could keep this simple. You could use the Xfinity thing for your guest wireless, but it's already out there. You know what I mean? You've got a sonic wall or something behind it, and then we'll use Unify inside only. We won't even go to a guest with VLAN and stuff like that. I mean, again, you could make it and do it all in Unify, but, whatever the proper solution is.
Yeah.
Depends on the client.
Yeah. And John did say you can turn it off. And so we would go through and have people turn it off.
It comes back on.
But they turn it back on.
Turn it back on. Next firmware update, and for the next refresh, it'll come back on.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah. So, So now
I have AT&T at home, so I got AT&T fiber at my house. So I don't share it with anybody.
So I just once again, last week, sent out a request to TCG to ask them what services are available. because now I didn't show you my setup. So I'm 1,000 feet
right.
from my house.
Right.
2 blocks.
Yeah.
I can get fiber at the house.
Yeah.
But not at the business.
Yes. So fiber at the house, you get a unified repeater and just put a little repeater out there and just shoot it.
There's too much stuff in between.
Drill. It's Florida, man. Cut it down. Florida man, that thing. Just be out there on Sunday night with the saw.
Like, howdy, neighbor. Howdy, neighbor. Clip.
Be like, I don't know what happened. Somebody must have come through here.
Like, yeah. So that is frustrating, but yeah. So Comcast is a big thing, AT&T. But yeah, so
fiber is really good for us.
Yeah,
I'm not an AT&T guy personally, but they brought some fiber to my neighborhood about almost 2 years ago now, and I got 1 gig fiber at my house. And when we made the joke, they were like, "You should close Phoenix and put the stuff at your house." But it's faster than my Phoenix data center.
Yeah, and more reliable than Comcast.
Yeah,
Comcastic.
Yeah, and Comcast gives it to us for free in our neighborhood.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I think we pay a little you bit. Don't use them.
They give us like basic cable and some other things for free. I think when we had, before we had the AT&T, we had Comcast, like the upgraded Comcast. We had HBO and like DVRs. And I think our bill was like $75. I mean, it was like really nothing compared to whatever everyone else was paying. Still got rid of it.
Yeah, ours is, so it was $303.
Yeah.
We got it down to $250.
Yeah. But you're on some 2-year contract where they get to turn your Wi-Fi. They get to turn your Wi-Fi on and share it with your neighbors.
No, we got our own modem and we're still on the month to month. Wouldn't let them do that. Actually, I think the last one I did, it was a 1-year commit. Mm-hmm. But I didn't care at that point. I got it down. So it was a 1-year commit, which is up now.
Yeah.
They didn't raise the rates, but I've been trying to get the wife to allow me to cut the cord.
Mm-hmm.
Because we already pay for all the services.
Yeah.
But the box is so much easier.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course we got 5 boxes
in
the house.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You try.
I can try.
Yeah. It works, I guess.
Okay. We got way off course.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's how that works. So the Alexa one goes, I was reading that, I just skimmed through it and I was like, let me go hop out of it. So, which I have to do still. Our houses are, so we're big on Alexa in our house. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I think I have 8 or 9 Alexas in my house.
Jeez.
So
you have kids too.
Yeah, I've got kids. We have one in every room.
Okay. So are you talking like the Echoes or?
Yeah, just the different ones. In the offices, we have the ones that you plug in, the little ones that you plug in.
I have no idea.
You have these little white ones that you just plug in the wall, and they actually have a little USB pass through. They're like mono audio. They're like $29 or something. The kids have the nice tower ones, and then like in the kitchen, and we have like the big one, the big show, in the kitchen.
Okay, with the tower ones, you're talking about the big black tower?
Yeah.
Okay.
The round cylinder ones, the older generation ones, yeah.
But that's so I got that, and I used it for like a month, and I don't even know where the power cord is for it. I know it's sitting in my tech room. Yeah. Because I thought it would be cool.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, okay, I just spent a lot of money for what I can get on my tablet and stuff. And I just hook up the thing. Yeah. So, the Echo, the show.
Yeah.
The Ring cameras.
Yeah, we don't have the Ring cameras.
Okay.
But I know they have those.
And what else you were going to, there's something.
The little, a couple of little ones in a couple of the bedrooms. Little small, whatever, those little dots or whatever, They're like little round.
Are those the clock looking things?
Yeah, they look like little round clocks. We have a couple of those, a couple of the big ones, a couple of the shows.
All right. Now, are you using those things to turn on things like lights and turn on your toaster?
It's funny because I've got the Philips Hue lights and I've got some smart switches and all that stuff like that. And, I've got the Samsung things with the oven and all that stuff is all smart, so I get like a notice when the refrigerator door is open. I don't have any of that tied into Alexa.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's my concern with them turning stuff on.
Yeah.
And because not only can they listen, but then they can attach to anything.
Yeah.
Even though they say they won't.
Yeah. And I just haven't done it. It's really not that I was like, oh, I'm not going to do it. I just haven't done it. I did put all those devices on their own network. In my house, I got a UDM with some Unifies at home.
Okay.
So they're on their own. I have a IoT network. I've got the home network. And then I have a camera network. So I got three VLANs at the house.
All right.
But your average person's not going to have, I mean, we're IT guys, right? We're expected to have that kind of
right.
stuff.
Right. Yeah. I've got two VLANs at the house.
The one thing, there was an Asus one that I had before that that I did have with Alexa that actually let you turn on the guest network with voice. So I really like that. Mm. That was kind of a nice feature because someone had the friends over and stuff, and I'd say, oh, Alexa, turn on guest for 8 hours. And it would turn the guest network on for 8 hours and then turn it off. So that was kind of a nice thing. Unify doesn't have stuff like that, but
okay.
You know, there are some nice things that you can do with it.
Now, are you doing any of that stuff here in the office or for your clients?
No, not really. Nobody's really asked.
Because, you know, those games are old school mechanical arcade games.
Yeah, they're old school. Well, I'm old. What do you offer me?
Since I won't turn the camera around, he's got a Pac-Man and a Rampage classic arcades.
Gauntlet and Joust is on there. The other one. So, yeah, they're...
You need Defender.
Yeah, Defender's on that one.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a multi-game?
Yeah. It's got like the Midway one has like 5 games on it. And then the other one has like 2
Pac-Man. If I'd have known that, we'd have played.
Yeah, right?
Defender was my game.
Yeah. Oh, man. That game was rough.
It was cool. Defender and Galaga.
Yeah. Those are the games, right? That shows our age.
Yeah. Let's move on. Yeah. All right. So are we done with hardware as a service?
I think
that's pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, I just, you know, that's the trick up my sleeve. Is it just buy your stuff cash. Don't be on the hook for it. You know,
all right.
Rent it out and just let it roll.
Okay.
If you're interested in doing it.
So let's do a switch. So one of the topics that you had wanted to bring up was zero trust. And so I had a show a couple of weeks ago where we talked about, you know, cybersecurity best practices.
Yeah.
And we didn't actually talk a lot about zero trust there, but I know that zero trust, I guess, for the last 2 years has been a big thing where everybody's talking about zero trust.
This stuff starts at the top and works its way, trickles its way down to guys like us.
Yeah, but then what happens is you turn on zero trust and then, a customer, I can't do this, I can't do that. And you got to end up turning some of the stuff off. Yeah. So
you get like 2 trust. Right. You end up at 2 trust.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny. I just was talking to marketing and stuff like that the other day about it because they're trying to do some stuff in zero trust. And, you know, I said, you know, I look at zero trust more like as a vision and it's not a tool, right? Zero trust is like a way of life kind of a thing. It's a culture change.
Right.
And you can't really, you know, there's no app or tool you could just say, oh, I'm going to put this out here and we're going to be zero trust. I mean, total gets you close, I guess. But, you know, you break everything. So it really has to, you know, the goal is to say, hey, we're going to be zero trust, but we're not the Department of Defense. We also have to do business and make money. And so you just have to find something to navigate that, you know, that path, so to speak, to find out, you know, what the tolerance is going to be.
Right.
Some clients are going to tolerate more interruptions and other clients are going to, you know, be on the phone hounding you every 2 minutes. So you just have to find the happy medium.
So when you and I first spoke, it was a few years ago, and we were talking about doing RDS farms and remote access and stuff. So is most of your zero trust just on the remote stuff, or are you doing any of that internal?
Meaning internal to clients?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're deploying it. So we started deploying some of our zero trust tools, which, you know, are just kind of start to move you down that road. We started deploying those tools in our new packages for 2021. So we've got 3 clients on them now. My 2 QBRs that I just did this past week, they're getting them soon. That was a part of the conversation we had today.
So now is this for like internal stuff? So if they go to access something inside the network, even if they're there, they have to do multi-factor?
Yeah, it's really just right now we're baby stepping with installations,
okay,
right? Running executables and stuff like that. We're going to whitelist applications and do those kinds of things. We're starting there. We're going to move up to proverbial zero or down, whatever you want to look at it, down to zero trust over time. But, you know, you have to just get them used to it first. I'm looking at a product now that's doing the keyboard stuff. So it's keyboard zero trust.
Okay.
Where they can predict where they could tell who's sitting at the keyboard after you've logged in. And the trust level of the user of the keyboard starts to fail if you don't type properly, or if you don't type the same way that it knows that you're supposed to type. So apparently the some big government agencies are doing that now. So not only do you log in and you multi-factor and log in, but then it tracks your keyboard and mouse usage and how you move and how long you press keys and how you type. And it starts to create a pattern. And then if somebody else, so if you logged in and then got up and somebody else sat down and started typing, by the second or third command line, they would be locked out.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So an AI component. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting.
Yeah.
We got to talk about that.
Yeah. I'm just in the early phases now of engaging with that company, just to seeing what they have. And it's funny because I mentioned to you earlier, I'm in my doing my CISSP right now. And we're talking about it in the CISSP, and then turn around and here's this company that, you know, that's doing it in the wild. Because they talked about some government agencies and stuff or started to do that a couple of years ago. And then I happened to stumble across these guys who are doing it.
So what industry is the first client that you're using that in? Healthcare?
I don't know yet. I'm not using it anywhere yet. I'm actually trying to see if it really works.
Okay.
You know, apparently it works. You know, these guys are coming in. It's a big company. And the name escapes me at the moment. But, you know, they do government agencies and stuff like that around the world. But this, and now they're starting to come up with like a medium business product kind of a thing. So, yeah.
Because that would make perfect sense for my healthcare.
Yeah.
Because found out the other day that somebody would log in for somebody because they didn't want to wait.
Correct.
And then they would, you know, log into the computer.
Right.
But then they would log into their medical manager software as the real person. So that would be a perfect scenario where it would shut them down.
Yeah. In theory, that would shut them down. They used the thing you could have it block them out. Mm.
Okay. Well, once you find out that works, you need to let me know.
Because
that I would love to see in my healthcare.
I'm waiting for the agreements and stuff and pricing that I have to come across my desk, and we'll see how crazy it is.
That's got
to
be a pretty penny.
Well, you know, it's only a pretty penny if you don't need it. If you need it, it doesn't matter what it costs.
That's true. That's true. All right. So what else in Zero Trust? So you've got that.
You know, you've got products like that. You know, you've got the passwordless stuff is kind of coming around now. There's some options there. Total is T-O-D-Y-L. They seem to be really the guys who probably are the closest, I think, if you're deploying that. Seems to be pretty close to, you know, true Zero Trust. But, you know, it doesn't work in every case. So, you know, it's not cheap. But again, you know, if you have a client that's just saying, I want to go all in and I believe in this philosophy or this, you know, this vision, then you, you throw a total out there and you just let it roll.
Right.
And you're probably, you know, you're going to be probably as locked down as anybody else in that scenario. I mean, you still have to protect the device. You know, you still need your EDR and your XDRs and anything else because, you know, that you want to protect the device itself. You don't just be like, well, they can't spread, so it's okay if 10 people get it. You know, that's all right, 10 people get ransomware and, you know, at least I didn't get the server, you know, right, 100 machines. Well, that's not really the point. The point is to just prevent it, you know, as much as possible. And so, yeah, I was just doing my little thing last night, and, you know, I described Zero Trust as like the difference between like a house and an apartment building. You know, we look at our offices like as a house, and, you know, you lock the doors and the windows and the back doors and stuff like that. But once I break in the window, I can roam the house freely. I can go anywhere, kitchen to the closet to master bathroom, right? I can just roam through the house. But if you looked at your office network as an apartment building, everyone's segregated out. Then that means that if I want to get into 100 devices, I have to literally break into 100 front doors. Changes the whole dynamic.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's where Zero Trust is going. It's just finding the happiness between Zero Trust and actually being able to function in the business.
All right. Are you guys doing a ton of stuff with data encryption, especially at rest? Or not at rest?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, we're doing BitLocker across the board and everything, you know, where we can. We're encrypting all our backups and stuff like that. Mostly, I think in the backups for encryption, I wasn't too concerned about. You know, we're encrypting them as they move across the wires anyway. For us on the backups was really making sure that they were actually segregated out. You cannot get to them from the front end. There's just no way.
Right.
I want to say no way. I mean, if somebody was sitting in front of the data center and had the cabinet open and was able to plug computers into the network, then I guess I can't really stop that, right? That'd be like having somebody in your server room.
Right.
But to really have them, you know, physically and logically separated. So we have them on their own switches now and stuff like that. I mean, even physically separate.
Okay.
So, you know, as best we can.
What about file servers? Because I know you can do the BitLocker for when it starts up, and then you can, you know, unlock the drives and stuff. But so I had a customer say, well, what if we want to keep the drive locked and then have people individually open up their files and stuff? So I haven't gotten that far with trying to figure out.
That'd be interesting. A long time ago, the public company that I worked at, we were doing a lot of financial audits, and we used to be able to do certificates on folder shares, where you'd have to have the certificate to unlock the share.
Okay.
So you'd have the share, but all the files were encrypted unless you had the cert. I don't remember exactly what it was. I mean, it's already 20 years ago, but probably sure there's something 100 times better than today. But we did have something like that way back in, you know, the Windows 2003 server days. So there's definitely ways to do it.
All right. That's my next project is to something BitLocker-ish, but better.
So they want like on-demand, but not password protected. They want on-demand decryption, but what are they going to decrypt with?
I don't know. That's the whole thing. Because their thought is, which I don't get, because I'm like, well, if you got to do BitLocker, you got to have a password for that. So,
or the key. We use the keys.
You use the YubiKeys and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then.
So those are nice, but, you know, I'm sure there's a way off the top of my head I couldn't tell you how to do it. I'm sure there's probably 100 ways. You probably got people in the chat saying, use this.
No, these guys in the chat, they haven't said a word. All they want to know is, why are you so small?
Yeah, why are you so small? Why is that guy's head so big?
Yeah, not one technical question at all in the chat today.
All right.
Usually it's a Florida man comment, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Fun stuff.
Yeah.
We're getting too deep in the woods, maybe.
I know. Encryption, healthcare, HIPAA, no.
What is all this stuff? You ever see the wall of, you know, DHS has the wall of shame where anyone with a HIPAA violation, they're publicly putting them up?
I haven't actually looked at that recently. So I subscribe to the HIPAA journal where they'll send out their, you know, violations.
These are the bad, these are the bad people.
Yeah, these are the fines, you know, $250,000 for this week.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's a, you know, nothing like public shaming people.
All right. So what can I say? I'm going to try to tell this story without saying a name. So I have a client, healthcare, that sent me They sent me an email and then called me. This is a couple of months ago because I threatened to not support them anymore unless we signed a business associate agreement. Mm. And we agreed that they would try to be HIPAA compliant because they wanted me to sign off that they were HIPAA compliant so they could get their MIPS money a while back. I said, no, not a chance.
Yeah.
So every now and then,
you in. Because I think it's like 3%. Medicaid, 3-4%.
Yeah. So they do some stuff. Mm. They don't do everything, but they do enough that I'm like, okay, I can feel comfortable that I've given them enough opportunity that if something happens, they understand it.
Right.
They screwed up by saying no.
Right.
But I protect their stuff. I mean, there's so many backups that if something does happen, ransomware, whatever, I'm good.
Right.
However, they sent me an email and called me because there was another healthcare agency just like them that had 27 offices that got hit with a ransomware.
Hmm. Zero trust.
and their call to me was, this can't happen to us, can it? If it can happen to the city of Atlanta, it can happen to you.
Yeah.
So we will be at the end of the year once they come out of their COVID.
Yeah.
Which is weird because this firm, I don't think they've been affected by COVID at all.
Yeah. They just don't want to come into the office anymore.
No, they come in. Huh? So all they did was change their policies of their patients don't come up to the office.
Yeah.
They have to sit in the parking lot. And then
they just like them out there.
They'll call them to come up, and then they wear masks, but they do everything.
Yeah.
Every employee is there.
Yeah.
I think for a week they alternated days.
Yeah.
But once the end of March 2020 happened, they were just back to doing whatever. In fact, they're expanding now. And their biggest problem is, so I will say this, they're on Freedom Voice. We talked about Freedom Voice before the show.
Yeah.
So they have an issue where there are sometimes when they call people, the number comes up as spam.
Uh-huh.
So especially people on AT&T with their new spam filter in the AT&T service, it goes straight to voicemail. So people eventually call up and say, hey, you haven't called us. I'm like, yeah, we did. We left you a message.
Right.
Well, I don't answer, spam calls. Right. And so they've gone back and forth. And this is a customer where they call Freedom Voice.
Right.
So I'm kind of on the outside. And they're trying to figure out how to make their number not show up as spam. Yeah. And I'm like, okay. So they're like, do you have another phone provider for us?
Yeah, it's called phone.
So I'm just reading. So here's a technical comment. I gotta get my glasses.
Seven. The answer is seven.
No. I had one client that gave the staff password for the Wi-Fi today to a client that wanted to get on their phone when we have a separate guest Wi-Fi only in Florida. Yeah. Yes. Actually, John, that happens.
That sounds like your office.
That happens all the time. Because so they have iPads for their medical software. They do EasyDerm photos.
Right.
They upload them, and then they need to print. They can print fee tickets and all that jargon from their iPads. So that has to be on the regular network. So they actually have three Wi-Fi networks, one for their private. They have one for guests. And then we have another one because they brought in this marketing company that put up all these boards so they could
paid for.
So that's on a separate Wi-Fi. And then of course I may have set them up with a fourth one because they wanted music on an iPhone that went over their loudspeakers, but they couldn't get it on the private network because we blocked all that. So we said, so I think another they have one. Four networks. So
Intune, you could push the SSID and the wireless stuff out. I don't know if you can push it to an iPad, but I would presume so. So you could actually make a super long password and not give it to anybody.
Yeah, but they're not on the Apple deployment program, so we can't manage their iPads.
Even with the Apple certificate, man?
No.
That's interesting.
No.
I've got mine. I've only played with the iPads, for us, just goofing around with Intune and stuff.
So we have an MDM, but basically all it does is tracks location.
Yeah.
I can reset the PIN. I can manage.
Let's see if Intune does it.
I can manage how long it is before it times out.
Right.
The automatic lock. But I can't manage any of the programs.
You can't put on the Intune, you could put the app deployment on there. And you could push apps out through the work profile type stuff.
Even if they're not under the Apple deployment program?
Yeah, you just say that I own it. So you grab the thing on Microsoft Intune, you go, oh yeah, that's a corporate owned. He goes, are you sure? And you go, yep. And then on the iPad, it says, this says it's a corporate company owned. And you say, yes.
Okay, I'll have to look at that. I did not know that.
Yeah. It gives you a little more, I don't know if you can push SSID. I mean, on Windows, you can.
Well, I know that. And so I moved from, I'm on SolarWinds. Mm-hmm. So the SolarWinds MDM didn't do any of that.
Right.
So I moved to Mirador.
Okay.
Which has all that, but the iPad has to be on the deployment program.
Yeah.
So if Intune will bypass that.
Yeah, you should look. Because I did Intune. I had to just go and register for an Apple certificate, which I just did. They called the office. Apple called and stuff and then granted us. I don't think it cost us anything. And then we got a cert.
You had to talk to Apple?
Yeah.
And so
they gave us an account to get a certificate. And we put the cert in Intune. And then that let us tie into the app to the App Store, where we could push apps from the App Store into iPads that are under that we manage.
Okay.
Yeah.
So with Mirador,
I only tested it on two, so don't quote me. I haven't done 200 or anything.
Okay.
We're just playing around with it.
So Mirador, I can do a, so in order to manage, I have to have an Apple certificate, but I can just do that through the Apple ID site. So I just log in with my Apple ID, get a certificate, and then I use that through Mirador to push that out with a profile. Interesting.
Yeah, I had to get something else because I did that and it wasn't the right one. And then I had to fill out another one. And then Apple actually called my office and spoke to my partner because she grabbed me. She goes, Apple's calling. Like, really? She's like, yeah, I got a guy from Apple on the phone. And first I was spam, like, you know, fake. And I was like, well, I filled something out for them like 3 days ago. And so we took the call and it turned out it was them. And they approved the account. And then, but yeah, it's something along those lines. I got some cert. And so now in Intune, when I register the iPad as corporate owned, I can push apps through the work profile. So apps come in through the in through the Intune app manager on the iPad. And if I wipe it, all those apps get wiped.
Okay. Now here's a question. For the Apple ID for the iPads, are you using the same Apple ID or you do an individual for each iPad?
So what it seems to be doing, like the kind of like Android's work profile, it seems to be making a separate profile on the device that's controlled by my Apple ID.
Okay.
Right. So I could still have my Apple ID and go to the App Store and I could do stuff, but then there is company portal apps that actually have a little different logo on them that are controlled by Intune that I'm pushing from my App Store and I'm pushing them down to the device and they have a little icon on them like in the corner.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll have to check and see because this is an office where they've got third-party apps.
Yeah.
So I'd have to see if they can. I mean, they're in the Apple Store, so they should be able to be corporate managed.
You could push them down through the corporate management thing. And then if you lose the device and you wipe it, those things get wiped.
Okay. Interesting. I'll have to look into that. Because right now we're managing all through one single Apple ID. And we have to turn off all the iCloud stuff and all of that. And then if somebody has an issue with an iPad, for instance, they go out and buy an iPad and they try to connect it to the network. Mm-hmm. And I have the password, but I can't get on. No, because I need your MAC address so that I can approve it in the list.
Yeah.
So then what they do is, well, if I can't get on, they'll get on the guest network and then wonder why they can't print or do anything.
They're limited to 1 meg.
So, no, I tried that, but every time they would call their app provider, they'd say, well, do a speed test.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you don't have enough Wi-Fi. And I'm like, trying to explain to them, no, they don't need, you should have 50 megs up and down.
Just put them all on the guest network.
So
that's what I would do. Put them all on the guest network.
And give them a separate printer outside the network.
Yeah, I'd just open up, port 9,000 to the printer or something from like that. I put it like in a DMZ and just put them all there. Do it. I don't trust any of these things.
That's
them all out there. That's an option.
Yeah. Make it easy for you. There's another comment. At least you don't have someone calling, looking to get PCI compliant, but won't let you behind the counter. He drew out his network on a sheet of paper. Yeah, I have those types of people too.
Yeah.
I have the guy. So I have the guy that calls up and says stuff like,
"Well, what level of PCI compliance too?" Because I get the ones, we're at the store and they want to do the credit cards and get the questionnaire.
Right.
I got a couple of like merchant banks that are like the guy comes out for 3 days and does, says show me a snapshot of memory, and what they come in, for days. I get tied up for 20, 30 hours.
Ouch.
Yeah.
The worst I've had to do is TrustWave.
Yeah, TrustWave.
They signed up for, all they did was once a month, TrustWave would scan the firewall.
Yeah.
And and if I didn't do the updates in time, you have 30 days to fix it. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, that's the, forget the levels, five. It's like 1 through 5 because I'm a transaction to do.
The customer's like, well, how much do we have to pay you? You pay me $95 a month for that.
Yeah. Wow, you're so nice. You're a nicer person than me. I don't feel bad now.
What do you charge him for that? You have a separate line item for PCI compliance?
Well,
or do you wrap it into your?
Yeah, so I mean, depends on which one. Like the merchant banks. I mean, it's 100 hours. It's going to be a 100-hour job. no matter how I slice.
Well, that's okay. That's true.
Those are, those are big boys. So, I don't know. I'd probably just do it hourly, but I would charge them every month, not 95. That's for sure. And I wouldn't let them deal with
it. Yeah, but remember, all I'm doing is making sure they can pass the scan on the firewall. It's 5 minutes.
You're trading time for money, man. You got to automate it and let it go. If you can.
For five minutes, $95 for five minutes, I'll take that.
Yeah.
Now, if I have to do more, then
I'd outsource that to a guy and I'll work for $10 an hour. Do these firewalls and I'll pay you, give me $50. And we'll get on with life.
Fiverr. Yeah. Oh my goodness gracious. So all right, so that's an interesting question. So we don't normally talk a lot of this, but as part of the summer tech series, I'm going to ask, and you can tell us as little or as much as you want. Okay. So in terms of your managed services bundling, so do you charge like by device, by user, flat fee? How do you normally charge? Because it sounds like you've got a whole bunch of stuff if you're also doing the hardware as a service.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have a couple of extra line items with the hardware as a service. We basically have four line items. We have device, servers, site, and productivity packs is what we call them. And I don't own that that term. That came from somebody else. And the productivity pack is basically whether they have hosted Exchange with us or they have some Office. So I do not let people buy Office by itself. They don't sell Office 365 by itself. It's bundled with something. So a couple different levels there. So most of our clients are on Business Premium, which is $20.
Right.
But we wrap the signature tool in there. We wrap the SaaS backup in there. It's not an option. So we sell it for like $35.
Okay.
So we get up there. My goal is to always be at 50% if I can.
Okay.
Everything. So, you can't be at 50% when you're making 16 or 18 points on 65. But you could put SaaS backup that cost you $2 and mark that up 70%. And you could put the signature thing that's cost you $1 and you can mark that up $5. And now you're making, now you kind of offset it. So on $21, you're at 35, you're a little closer to 50%. Right. So that's really the core line items. And we do have some clients that have early support, our co-managers and stuff like that. We'll be projects and stuff like that. So there's still some, labor, but our core piece is going to be those four things. And then our cloud services are pretty big. Most of our clients who have cloud usually have one or two other things with us. We started offering basic monitoring, like per device monitoring to kind of go with the cloud where like they don't really need a lot of help desk. Everything's in our data center anyway. So basically, we just make sure the device has antivirus and updates and stuff like that, and pretty much hands off for the most part.
Okay.
We have a lot of clients kind of there. So we have like basic monitoring package. We still bill them hourly if we have to, but we don't do anything with them for, once a year maybe or something like that, a couple times a year. That printer update that broke all the printers last month.
Right.
So we had like two clients who are in this base that are like with our cloud, but just like have basic or nothing on desktops. They got huge bills because we had to go and fix 50, 60 laptops with printer that had the bad printer update from Microsoft, and they used all those big printers there. But we're really, it's really at the core of it, it's four line items. We have a site charge, per device charge based on server and workstation, and then the productivity packs, which are just 365 different bundles of 365.
Okay.
So that's the core of our structure.
All right. Yeah. So I need to answer a question in the chat that said, Marvin, you only charge $95 an hour. So the short answer is no. So basically my top rate is $185, which most people don't pay because they're on some sort of plan. And then the base rate for a lot of stuff is $150. But what I do is, so I will do a combined base, which is all of my managed service stuff, 365, my wireless access points, and they will be basically one price per device plus all the stuff. And then that's all I do a price that will cover all of that plus 30%. So that's what their base is. And I usually do it in groups of five. So that way, if they add a device, I'm not really changing the price. I'm usually, you know, if they have 21 devices, they're paying for 25.
Right.
And then that way, as they add stuff, I don't have to worry about, right, you know, worrying about, you know, adds or subtractions every month.
Yeah, mid-month stuff. And right, we also deal with it.
So that's my base, which is, you know, covering all my costs plus the
30%. Right.
Then I will bill them a certain number of support hours.
Right.
The support hours is basically the $95.
Right.
And that's the lowest that anybody can ever pay, but they have to be on a plan.
Right.
So for instance, let's say the one plan we talked about with there are 185 users. Mm-hmm. So they're paying, I forget what the number is, but they're paying, my cost is what? It's $6 a station for my tools.
Right.
And then I bill them. So they're on the Datto networking appliance for the Wi-Fi. I charge them for watt boxes. I charge them for...
Now, is that your hardware as a service?
That's...
So that could be.
For the Datto? Yeah, that's all hardware thing, for that.
Right. Just you're paying Datto every month.
Yeah, paying Datto. So. And then...
It unifies there and then charge them hardware as a service and
I also charge them. So I've got auditing software. So that'll monitor anytime a password is changed by the in-house IT.
Nice.
So I'm aware of that. Anytime they make a change to group policy, I get alerted. I've got a Domotes on site, mm-hmm, that I will charge them for. So anytime a new device pops on the network, I've got key devices that go down. That's monitored by both Domotes and my SolarWinds. Mm-hmm. What else? A couple other things. So there's a price for that. And then I'll bill them the 80 hours at $95, and that covers most of their stuff. And then we have, anytime I have to send either myself on site or one of my contractors. Now, so some of the contractors I make money on, some of them I lose money on, depending on what it is. Mm-hmm. But since they're paying me, that's, you know, 80 hours and 95, that kind of makes up for it a lot of times. So that, I hope that answers your question, John. I probably gave out much more information than anybody's ever heard over the last 5 years as to my rates. But 150 is usually the rate. If somebody has to call me out for something, it's 150.
Yeah, you're going to laugh. I don't know my rates.
That's fine. You're the CTO. Know. You should.
I don't know what the rates are. As a matter of fact, I think I told somebody not too long ago, I think I said 150 off the cuff, and somebody was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I really don't know, but don't say anything. So.
Yeah. Here's a technical question.
Seven.
Have you ever used AVIC to monitor networks?
I use AVIC.
You do?
I only use AVIC, yeah.
Okay.
I only use AVIC.
So they called me a couple years ago.
I couldn't get Domotes to work for what I wanted.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, Domotes, it's pretty basic.
Yeah, it was rough. Yeah, I like Domotes. I like the interface.
Mm-hmm.
I like the design. I liked all the front end stuff about it. It was the back end.
Okay.
You know, we had conversations, and I've demoed it twice. They contact me all the time. I'm Violet or whatever from the Desert Demos. Her and I are in a chat room together and stuff, and we talk every few weeks. Every time they have a new thing, she's like, look what we had, look what we had. I'm like, I know, Violet. I see it. But I had a problem with the back end.
Okay.
You know, which was... A lot of the gear that I'm dealing with is like EMC SANs, NetApps, hypervisors, HP, you know, hypervisors. Right. And it doesn't do that stuff very well. And I even mentioned to Violet, I said, I get your place in the market. I said, but you keep coming to me saying, oh, we do all, but you don't. Because when I go see your demo, the guy talks about IoT devices, AC units,
cameras,
secure. I go, so it's clear your focus is on the, like, kind of the front of the house retail gear, which is totally fine. I go, but don't, you keep coming to me talking about how you can do the whole network, and I'm telling you, you can't.
Right.
You know, you can't see across my VLANs. You can't, you know, you can't see this and that. So for me, it
well, they say they can see across the VLANs.
Yeah, if you manually put the information.
Yeah, but, you know, I've had hit or misses with that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that was my issue too.
I only use it, it's funny, I only use it for alerting for my key devices.
Yeah.
For wake on LAN,
yeah.
Is that it?
Well, I mean, yeah. Look, if you're managing somebody's network, you have to have an NMS. You have to have an NMS.
Right.
I mean, you can't. What do you tell a customer? Like, oh, their switch went down, and it takes you an hour to figure out that switch went down. And they're like, well, you're monitoring my network. You don't monitor this freaking piece of it. Well, that's a separate thing. You can't do that. That's not a, you know, you might understand it, but our client doesn't understand. If you're going to monitor their network, you monitor their network.
Right.
So we're standardized on AVIC. Been pretty happy with it. Matter of fact, we just solved the problem today. Funny, a client of ours kept having timeouts on their Comcast fiber, and we went into AVIC. We're pulling the WAN interface stats. You're only using 60 megs. I'm like, I don't really get it. And he goes, yeah, it should be fine. It should be fine. It should be fine. So I called Comcast on his behalf, and I said, you know, we're only getting 60 megs on this pipe. And the guy goes, you know, he only has 50. He goes, you're actually over by 10.
Oh,
I'm like, the client told me he had like 250 on here. And we're getting 60 and we're getting crushed. You know, all day he's been down. So now actually I got TCG and all these guys working on trying to bump up to 150 or something. You probably change the circuit out. But so it's just a funny thing today. So AVIC, helped us figure out a problem today.
Okay.
I mean, getting that stuff out of a sonic wall or something like that is...
It's a little painful.
It's a little painful. I mean, you could see it. But it's not the same. You know, I literally went into AVIC, I threw the graph up, and I took a picture of it and sent it to the client. I'm like, this is your usage. And he's like, that should be fine. I've got 200 megs. I got 200 megs. I'm like, yeah, you don't have, no, you have 50 megs.
Right. Yeah. So I was just looking at my Domo's app. So it looks I can go in and look inside switches, and I can tell what devices are on ports and stuff. So for me, you know, that's
nice. It is nice.
Yeah.
And I think they might get there, you know, one day. I think they haven't put their efforts into the stuff that I need.
Well, they've only been in the MSP space 2 years, 3 years, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I demoed it, they didn't even have an integration in the ConnectWise or anything.
Right.
You know, so when I first demoed them. So
I saw last week, they actually are in Synology NASes now.
Domo's?
They've got their app built into
this. Oh, built in?
Yeah.
Good for them.
So
zero tier is in there too.
One of, or
you could put it in there. Apparently, I didn't even know, but somebody told me about it. We're playing with zero tier for our zero trust.
Okay.
On the engineering side, and somebody just told me recently. He goes, you know, they're in maybe it was QNAPS. I don't know. He's like one of those, but they have a plugin. You could put zero tier right on that device, so you can just hit it. So zero tier is a good way. Another way to do zero trust stuff.
Yeah. So I wish I'd have known that before I purchased a bunch of custom logoed Domo's boxes.
Yeah.
So when I got the boxes and I put them on site, it says MB Systems on it.
Yeah. Nice.
So I still got like 10 of them sitting in my office because before COVID, I couldn't deploy them all because nobody wanted me on site.
Yeah.
Ugh. So.
But you got to have those. I mean, you got to be doing NMS. I do most of my AVICs. I do as a servers. I have an AVIC appliance multi-VLAN appliance in my data centers because I've got, I don't know, 16, 18 VLANs or something like that in there. So it's just easier to have a multi-tenant one, which again was nice.
Right? Yeah.
So in Domo's, I'd have to have 18 units, and in AVIC, I have one. And he's, you know, 300 devices or plus devices across 18 VLANs in one unit. So, I mean, they don't charge that way, and they just charge by how many, you know, the devices, but just less stuff to have floating around.
Yeah.
In my case.
All right.
But AVIC is good.
All right, John. Hopefully that answered your question on AVIC. So, yes, Ben Filippelli uses AVIC.
Yes.
And I use Domo's until I need something else.
Yeah.
And if anybody wants to buy 10 MB System logo Domo's devices, sell them to you cheap.
Put a different logo on there.
Just throw a sticker on top.
Yeah.
What's funny is, so the logo's on top. Mm-hmm. Anybody can just go in and turn the box over.
Yeah.
It's powered by Domo's.
Yeah. So, that's right.
That's not a bad thing. All right. Well, we have gone quite a while, including the outage that we had earlier.
Ba-dum-bum.
John says, sell them on eBay.
Yeah. You find somebody. People don't care.
That's true. I may do that. Although, do you sell stuff on eBay?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I have sold some stuff on eBay, but not typically.
So once a month, I'll probably go in on a Saturday, and anything I've got laying around that I'm done with, like an old, you know, memory sticks or, you know, what did I sell last week?
I throw it all out.
So I do have a recycler come and take some stuff, but I think if I think I can get money on it, I'll throw it on eBay. And I sold 6 Intel network cards for $40. All right. But it used to be that eBay would allow you to get your payment to PayPal and, you know, do all this stuff. So now they've instituted their eBay payments. And not only that, they have their eBay shipping. So they try to do it. And I think it's great for somebody that's an eBay business and they just want everything automated, blah, blah, blah. So you sell your item on eBay and your fees are automatically taken out of your income. They want you to ship using their label so that's automated. But I found that with my UPS discounts, I get better shipping rates. So I always like to do that separate.
Right.
So for some reason, something wouldn't work when I tried to ship it out. So I ended up doing a eBay label. And I clicked a box to bill me later or something like that. Well, then all of a sudden they came back like last month. This was something for 2 months ago. And they said, oh, we automatically took out $8.25 in your account. I'm like, what? Because they send the payment literally 2 days after your item sells. So you have nothing in an account anymore. Yeah. Whereas if I had everything in PayPal, a lot of times I just leave the money there. So.
Yeah, you figure I'll use it to buy something later or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
interesting. I sold a few things on eBay. We bought a ton of equipment once from somebody going out of business, and it was worth, you know, 10 times what we paid for it, all this stuff. So we sold it all, a bunch of it that we didn't need. We kept a few things we needed. Matter of fact, I still have a big 80 loader tape drive with like 80 tapes. That's like the six, it's like a dual 10 gig network.
Really?
Yeah. On eBay, they're like $6,000.
Like DAT drives? Like the old DAT?
Yeah. Like LTO3 with like 80 bays with an auto loader and stuff.
Nice.
I see them on eBay for like $5,000. I put it up and somebody offered me like $400. I was like, they're literally $4,000 or $5,000 everywhere else. So I just left it. I still have it sitting back there.
Yeah. So eBay's getting weird. So there are some stuff that I'll put on. So when my wife left, who'd she work for?
You.
No, that was before me, when she was making good money. She, LA Weight Loss.
Okay.
So she ran a store down here, and then she went up to Atlanta and tried to open up the Atlanta market, and that didn't work out after 2 years. So she came back. So LA Weight Loss closed all their stores down here. This was around so 2007, 2008, 2009, when the real estate market
was dumping,
So it just killed everything with discretionable income. So they started closing all their stores. Well, we were able to go into all the LA Weight Loss stores and take all their equipment.
Oh, there you go.
So computers, firewalls. So we had a whole bunch of Cisco routers that we got. And just throw them on eBay.
Yeah.
And they were selling for $400, $500, $600. Nice. And I told the wife, I said, this will be your way to make money.
Right. For a while.
For a while. And then she started working for me and making less money. But so now you can put stuff on there and it just sits. Everybody wants to get it for 99 cents.
Yeah. Do you ever, it's funny, you know, maybe just think, do you ever hear the Nortel Network story with Hawaii and how they stole all their stuff? Mm-hmm. So Nortel Networks at the time, you know, was the big guy. They were the big player in like the edge routing space and stuff, Canadian based. And Huawei was actually owned by the Chinese government, or Chinese military people run it. They actually put malware in rootkits in those computers, and they were stealing all their stuff for several years. Nobody found out until later. And there were some people raising the red flag and the whistles and stuff like that, but they kind of got ignored. I just was listening to us on another show. And when they eventually went bankrupt and auctioned all their stuff, I think it was NEC and IBM, Digital, those guys bought a bunch of their routing equipment and installed it. And then all of a sudden noticed that they all had malware. And I believe they, so a couple of them tried to go back and sue and say that you knew that stuff was there and you didn't even remove it before you sold us the equipment, knowing that there was like Chinese malware, zero rootkit stuff on all this equipment. And they said, well, we didn't know. And there was this whole, I guess, back and forth. I didn't look too into the you know, those claims, but that's, you know, I was listening to the story. And anyway, that made me think about that. When they went out of business, I was first, I thought, when you said, we grabbed all the gear, I was like, did you wipe it all first and send it? You know, who knows what was on there.
All right. Well, we've gone much further than we normally do. Part of that is with the camera mishap.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rich, again.
Yeah.
Another thanks, shout Rich. Out for you there. And thank you for everyone participating tonight in the chat. Thank you for watching. If you are listening after the fact and you want to go back and see the joyful mishap and look at the off-center screen, my, I got a shiny head. Look at that.
I put those lights up extra high, y'all.
So you have been listening to the first of the Summer Tech Series, where I am here on location in Boca Raton, Florida, with Ben Filippelli, the CTO of Level 5 Management. And we didn't get the visit from your COO.
No. No, I think she's dealing with other problems. work-related problems.
All right. So we got to talk a lot about co-managed services, talked about zero trust, hardware as a service. So if anybody has an idea on how to make money with hardware as a service, Ben has given you a very good blueprint on that. And if you have any questions, do you want people to contact you if they have questions?
Contact me. I can try to help anybody if they need help.
All right.
Offering to help.
So we'll have his contact information in the show notes. Or you can go to level5mgmt.com. Is the website Level 5 Management here in Boca Raton, Florida. We are just steps away from the Boca Raton Executive Airport, also FAU. Yeah. And what else is around here?
365 data centers is here.
Yep.
And FAU is the big one. We're basically on the backside of the FAU campus.
Yep. And right on the other side of 95 is the nice corporate park where IBM is there. Who else is there?
Oh, and the private prison, the big private prison company is right there. That owns all the prisons, all the private prisons in the country, Geo Group.
Okay.
Yeah, I've consulted for them a couple of times.
I was going to say, have you gotten in to get their business?
They have an interesting thing, not to side note it, but they have so many people who come there to kill them that they have the reception is on the first floor with all glass, with bulletproof glass, and then they buzz you up to the top floor. There's no other way to get up to the top floor because they have people who come, who get out of prison and come,
wow,
come there and threaten them. So the reception group is in an office that's all clear glass. So they could see from the time you walk into those doors all the way through the halls and stuff like that. And they could see you all the way through up to where you buzz, try to buzz in. And that glass is all bulletproof. And so it's pretty interesting. But the actual company is on the top floor.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty interesting thing.
So
across the street.
That'd be an interesting business to get. You can get their camera business.
Yeah.
And
yeah, until something happens and then they go and you're liable and you find out it didn't record.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, Ben, I want to say thank you for allowing me to come and visit your office here.
Thank you, sir.
And folks, I apologize for not doing the tour, but
it's an office.
It's an office, yeah.
Cubicles, desks, computers.
Yeah. Your typical Florida coral brown paint.
Yeah. I didn't pick it. But yeah, we live with it. It's home.
Yep. All right. So that is going to do it for this episode, folks. Again, thank you to Ben. And normally we do a post show, but because we went so long, we will not have a post show. So if you're waiting around for that, sorry. Just remember next week to participate in the chat, like John and Tom and our good buddy Rich.
Don't ask him to change anything.
Well, next week I won't be on site. I will be back at the studios of MB Systems, where we will have Kyle Kenyon on, and we will have a very similar discussion on techs and how they run their business. And hope that you enjoyed this episode. Hope you had some good tips to help you run your business better, smarter, and faster. Ben, any last words as we head out here?
No, keep up the good fight, everybody. It doesn't get better.
That's encouragement for you.
Yeah, well.
You know. All right, folks, that's going to do it. Thank you all for tuning in, watching, and or listening. Be sure to head over to podnutspro.com and subscribe using your favorite podcatcher, or subscribe to YouTube or Facebook, and you can see us whenever we do a live show. And go back and listen to any past episodes here at podnutspro.com, and then support the show either by shopping at the Amazon store or donating on PayPal, Patreon, or buying me a cup of coffee. That is going to do it, folks. We'll see you here next week, same time, same channel. Until next time, holla.